All right, for, let's see, this is going to be Thursday, May 10th, 2018. This is a special edition of the Deep Dive. We are diving into Avengers Infinity War. War, not wars. Thank you. Word to Deepalm. You might hear my son screaming downstairs in the background because he's playing hockey with my wife and winning, because if he doesn't win, we all lose. this is Rich Fan. I'm joined today by my partners in crime first, my partner for a year and change on the Friday Livecast, senior columnist Bruce Mitchell, and of course, my East Coast cast brethren, South Congress occasional host slash boss, Cameron Hawkins. And Cameron's here as the color commentator to the nerddom that Bruce and I are about to drop with Infinity War, so we apologize. And just to get this out of the way now, you know, we're trying to shoot for like an hour, hour, 10 minutes. This is a spoiler cast. We're going to talk about wrestling somewhat, but this is going to be spoilers about a comic book movie, and we're going to talk about comic books. So if I get one email that says, how dare you guys spoil during a spoil cast, your deep dive into the Avengers, I'm going to have to find you, and I'm going to have to send Travis to kick you in the shin, because I'm not trying to go to jail. So before we get started, Guy, what'd you think of the movie? Cam?
I really enjoyed it. It's a thing where I'm seeing these big movies at the weirdest times. Like, we did, a cosplay for the movie with a local comic shop. And so I'm in costume for like 6 hours, and then I finally get into the movie. And, you know, it was draining emotionally, but in a good way. Like, I felt like my time paid off. I felt like the characters were given proper time to where, even if you didn't know exactly what's going on, you got a feel for their relationships. I think the action was great, and just the driving plot, it was just really good. I'm such a fan of the movie. I don't know if I'll ever watch it again. I liked it that much, but that's just kind of how I am with movies. So, yeah.
And what about you, Bruce? What'd you think of the movie?
Cameron, what were you dressed up as?
I was the Black Panther again for the second time in a row. It's pretty cool.
That would have to be. I love the movie. I have a kind of a different take on it, in that the 15-year-old me, and I'm way past 15, but the 15-year-old me would have been just blown away, and I still live with that guy, at seeing all that on the screen, because I'm a comic book guy. I mean, I've been my whole life, and loved the source material for that before it became a thing. I loved the characters. I about had tears in my eyes when Thanos appeared on the screen at the end of the first Avengers movie. But to see that done well, to see that done right, and to see it built up over 10 years, over, what is it, 10 movies, is just amazing to me. And so I will say this. I was rooting. I had my idea what was going to happen, and then they went all the way with it. I really figured that Guardians of the Galaxy had set up all along to get slaughtered, because they had their Thanos they had Batista, Drax, the Destroyer, and Gamora, and all that. And so it'd be like, you know, they just kill everybody in the Thanos would kill everybody in the Guardians of the Galaxy, and the Avengers would stop Thanos, and you'd be, you know, aghast at that. But no, they took it the entire way. And to be in that movie theater and see the feelings going on, and to have those feelings too, oh my God, they had just had this triumph in their last movie, and then there he goes. And I'm just like, damn, that took a lot of balls. And I was so happy to get pulled in my school, to get pulled by my principal and the art teacher, who I've, pulled to the side, and they're like, what the hell happened? I hated the ending. I'm really upset. And I'm like, well, you know, they're not immersed in pop culture quite as much as some of us. And I was like, you know, there's another movie, and, there's a guy that came out of North Carolina A&T that used to say, keep hope alive. Just wait for the next movie and don't be too upset. But, I'm thrilled. I love that movie.
And for me, I can't say anything that you guys hadn't already, but for me, it was amazing to see side characters. Like, I'm a big side character guy when it comes to these movies, because you can get, like, I trust Marvel's going to get things right, but seeing even the small changes they made to the Cull Obsidian, the Black Order, that seeing the four of them in that opening scene with the overhead shot of them standing over Loki gave me chills, because it's like, I never thought I would see something that cool done right.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh God, you know, as a comic book fan, going back literally to, it was the Batman TV show on ABC. That's how old I am. As a little kid, you know, that's what hooked me into Batman, which hooked me into comic books. And there's been so many bad television shows, mm-hmm. and so many bad movies, and so many they change something for the sake of changing it, or because of the budget or something, and you're just like, why the hell did you do that? And I would definitely say there's more bad movies than good ones. And even the good ones, like the second or third one, would be like, holy crap, that was awful. You know, Batman and Robin and a lot of the Superman movies, except for the first one or two. And so
you didn't like The Quest for Peace, Bruce?
No, I didn't like The Quest for Peace. I love the idea of Richard Pryor, you know, the ultimate black man versus Superman, the ultimate white man. And then you go and see it, and it's like, that ain't Richard Pryor. So I just thought you get disappointed. And so now when the changes come, and we'll talk about some of them from canon, from the comics, the movie changes are so good and so much well thought, and they fit into what's gone on before, but they take the opportunity to do it a little better. And I go back to Robert Downey Jr. and how he plays Iron Man. I mean, it's just it made that character, and it was a good character, such a better character. But yeah, you're just sitting there going, holy crap, you know, just that had been 10 years for Thanos' henchmen for the Black Order, and there they are, done just really well. You're just like, man. So there was a lot of mix of characters that I never thought of Thor in the Guardians of the Galaxy as having very much chemistry, but they had a ton of it. That was really fun to see, and it was unexpected too.
And yeah, I think it was timing. Oh, go ahead, Cam.
Oh yeah, and I was just gonna not to just give away all the things that, like Bruce said, that were changes that I think worked. I mean, making Thor more or less an alien, I think was a great change, because that gives him that relationship with the Guardians where, you know, Drax looks up to him and envies him, but they can also exist in the same space to where he's a space traveler at that point. And just the comedy between Thor and the Guardians, I think, was one of the highlights of the movie. I think that something you said, Bruce, about making changes for the benefit of the movie, I think one of the subtle ones is having Captain America clearly be Nomad, but never actually say Nomad. But if you know the comics and you know the history, you look at them and that's what you see. Like, they just, it's just all really intelligent, and it's done in a way that you're not ashamed to be a fan of any of this stuff. Like, they hold their audience with a certain amount of respect if you've done your homework. And then even if you haven't, you understand why things are the way they are. Just a really good movie.
Yeah, it works on those levels. You're exactly right. And then it called back to some things that I love the most about comics and some storylines I love the most. And they were, in my teenage years. And Nomad's one of them. And it's just the original time that Captain America wasn't Captain America anymore, and you're just and to see people who created these things, who they're not quite getting the credit that they actually deserve, and that I don't know how much money you could pay Jack Kirby and his family for the mythology that's now such a part of our culture, but they've been well paid, and Jim Starlin's been well paid, and Steve Englehart's been, they've gotten, at a time where they didn't think they would get anything, they've gotten, not because of Marvel Comics or not because of the comic book industry, but because the movie industry treats creative people better, they've been able to get, at a time in their life, they've been able that they could use it as, because they're independent contractors for real, they're getting paid, and they're getting some adulation. And then everything's getting reprinted from back in the day. I read that the Infinity Gauntlet, which is 30 years old, that trade paperback, which has a lot to do with this movie, is one of the is definitely, I think the top trade paperback on sale right now. And a lot of times these movies don't affect comics as far as sales go. It's people go to the movies and they may go into the shop, but comics is an outmoded way of whatever it is, whatever the reason is, they're just not used to it. They don't want to do it, or whatever. And so, this seems to have some resonance. And then Black Panther had just this huge cultural resonance. And then this builds in certain ways on that. So, it's really cool. I mean, I also think it's pro wrestling. You put the heat on the heel, like crazy, and you put the baby face up against the odds. And boy, did they put the baby faces up against the odds in this movie. And I think the people that were, some guy behind me goes, we're walking out of the theater, and he goes, "So much for Wakanda Forever." And I wanted to say, "That's what you think," but I thought, "I'm gonna shut up, don't say anything." Mm-hmm. And yeah. People are going to be on their feet on the comeback. When the comeback comes, and I don't know how it's going to come, but it's coming. And, as much as they're shocked and dismayed and taken down, they'll be built back up again. And that's just basic good guy, bad guy storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, what did you guys think of when you first see it? The film opens and you have two big Thor characters wiped out in between a ridiculously awesome reenactment of the finale of the first Avengers movie, with Loki playing the role of Stark, Hulk being himself, and then Hulk then being Loki as Thanos showed him he had hands, word to Braun Strowman. First, let's talk about the deaths. Let Loki, after this many years, seeing him just get his neck snapped and thrown away in trash, How deserving do you think that death was? What were your thoughts as that happened? And then juxtapose that with Heimdall and losing Idris Elba as the kind of soulful presence that somehow kept things together for Thor when he was away from Asgard.
I think it shows the stakes. If immediately. Rich, we're kids of a certain age where you have you play Street Fighter 2 forever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And M. Bison is just the baddest dude in the world. And then Akuma shows up and everything's different. Or you play Mortal Kombat and Shao Kahn's the hardest guy to beat ever in life. Or Shang Tsung's the hardest guy, and then Shao Kahn shows up. I think we're a generation of people who, the next big bad comes. I think that it's great to show the humanity and devotion inside of a Loki on his way out, even though he's the tie that binds. Even originally when the Avengers come together in the comics, it's to combat Loki, So I think that getting him kind of out of the picture early on just shows what you're dealing with, with Thanos. And then they explained it great in the movie. I've never seen a real superhero movie, because they tried so many times with Batman and couldn't nail it, where you basically put your hero on the therapist couch. And, Thor says flat out, "I lost all my family. I lost my best friend. My brother, who's been trying to kill me forever, he's taken from me." I think that opening the movie like that, it just shows how big of a deal Thanos is. It shows that they're playing for keeps. It shows that these things don't play out like fairy tales. Comic books are long and complex, and sometimes have lasting actions and reverberations. And I think when you establish that tone early, at least if you're someone who's dedicated, if you sat through all 18 movies, then it puts you in a mindset that, all these spoilers and ideas and blogs that I've been reading about what's going to happen, that's out the window. I really do have to pay attention, and they're respecting my intelligence and how much attention I've paid to all this. I just think it sets an amazing tone and really dives into, Thor as one of the three or four big characters in this universe.
I thought, thought it was really interesting what you're talking about, Cameron, in that I'm not a Mortal Kombat, Street Fighters. I mean, I'm of the generation or two before that, and so, that wasn't something I played. But you go back to the original Norse mythology and mythology in general, Greek mythology too. These characters, these gods, morph and change. And then they do in the comics too, and it's kind of what you're talking about as far as the big bad becomes something else. And interestingly enough, like a week ago, part of it is to take advantage of what's going on in the movies. But Marvel put out a new number one Avengers, put their top talent on it, and just like the number one 50 years ago, there's low key. Involved in some way, in a mysterious way, of with what's going with the big bad that's going on in that book. And I thought it was really interesting. Number one is exactly what you said. The stakes are really high. And you looked at Heimdall, who, as you said, you know, like this character that kind of, you know, that was an anchor for the Thor franchise. And he dies, and he's the all-seeing. He's the one that stands on the Rainbow Bridge and can see everything. And you know that what he sees is horrible, and dies. And then low-key, I thought there's several things going on here. Low-key, they kept saying he's dead. They kept making a point in the of saying he's dead, he's dead, he's dead. But I also thought there's something going on here. There's a thread here. And I thought it related at the end to Doctor Strange saying, "This is the end game." That I wonder. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's happening in the next movie. I wonder whether we're going to see Loki again in some way, shape, or form, because, you know, that character's a trickster. That character is evil, and he was doing the bidding of Thanos in the beginning. But he's also, you know, he and Thor are brothers. So, you know, is he gone? Is he not gone? And then they gave you that taste of Hulk. And again, this was like wrestling to me too. It's like, they gave you that taste of Hulk. They gave you the callback to the first Avengers movie. I mean, it's great what you said with Loki. And then Hulk got his ass kicked by Thanos, and you're like, damn, Thanos is bad. And then you don't get Hulk again.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's like, why doesn't Hulk come through? You get the Hulkbuster. You get the Hulkbuster with Hulk in it, but it's Bruce Banner, and you don't get like where is he? But you know you're gonna see Hulk again, and you know you're gonna see Hulk. You're gonna see the rematch again too with Hulk and Thanos. So I thought that really set a lot of interesting things on the table. The only thing I know, I know for sure there's going to be a comeback. I don't know how and why. And also just the entire thing. I think people don't understand. I mean, I think people, and I don't blame them, don't understand those soul gems, even though they explain it, is it gives Thanos the power of God. And so the key to everything, the key for Thanos and the key for everybody else, is to keep that gauntlet on, and for everybody else is to get the damn gauntlet off of him somehow. So I'm like, what kind of game is being played? What kind of against the odds, knowing what's coming from the Sorcerer Supreme and from Loki and from some other folks, is going on here? Or was it just, you know, they all got their ass kicked and everybody died?
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
Yeah, I when you're speaking about the Hulk, one of the things I'm looking forward to, hopefully in the fourth movie, is finally seeing the actualized Hulk of, I want to say, the mid-80s, where it was the brains of Banner in the body of the Hulk. I love the current run because Amadeus Cho has had the conversation not only with himself and his Hulk, but with Bruce and the idea of the passenger in the trunk. And they've carried it the last 2 years in Marvel and the comics. And I've loved it because you think of the Hulk in a different way. It isn't just that you have this alter ego when you get really mad, that if the bullies are pushing you around and you turn into the Hulk and nothing can hurt you. It's the fact that this rage is so dangerous. If you leave your hand off the wheel for a second and let him take it, you might never get it back. And we saw hints of that in Thor Ragnarok, where he had been Hulk for 2 years and Banner had never shown up. And now, in Infinity War, he, after Thanos gave him the two-piece and a biscuit, wanted no part of a rematch.
No smoke.
None.
Zero smoke.
Yeah, that was really, you know, that was really interesting. I also want to call back to something that Cameron said. The difference between Marvel Comics and DC Comics originally, in the original Fantastic Four, in the original Spider-Man, was that, you know, DC Comics had this reputation, dull comics. It was, you know, Superman, he wasn't challenged all that much. They, you know, he stood up for white bread values, and Batman was kind of this goofy character that was fighting space aliens and all this, and there wasn't much personality to any of it. And just Stan Lee was bored. He wanted to write the great American novel, but he didn't think he had a shot. And his wife said, who just passed away recently, his wife said, well, why don't you just do that with the comics? No one's paying attention to you. And so, you know, he started writing the Fantastic Four. Like, the Fantastic Four, this never happened in comics where they're like real people where they didn't like each other. That Ben Grimm was pissed off that he turned into this monster because of the irresponsibility of Reed Richards. And then you had Peter Parker, who Spider-Man, who you know, got the big head, decided to go into pro wrestling, and this burglar ran past him. The cops are going, get him, get him. And he's like, it's not my problem. And he lets the guy run by. And, of course, the guy goes and burglarizes his own house and kills his uncle. You know, and so, you know, great power comes great responsibility. You have that angst in Marvel Comics. Yet, you know, Marvel, the original difference between Marvel Comics and all the other comics and their superheroes was that everybody had this, you know, they had closer to real life problems. They worried about how to pay the rent. They worried about getting kicked out of their building. They worried about people hated them because of, you know, they hated the Hulk. Was the Hulk a hero or an anti-hero? And even though he would fight villains, because he was the Hulk, he caused all this damage and somebody could die and that kind of thing. So I think that, like, that's been, you got this generation of filmmakers who grew up or either worked in comics but grew up loving all that and wanting to use it and wanting to take it into 2018 in a way that really does work, where you feel for Thor losing his family, but he's more interesting than he was for many years in the comics because he's got this sense of humor where he was just kind of this ponderous, you know, Norse god. And so that and same thing with Loki, where Loki was there's so much interesting about the way he's played in the movies that allowed them to change up that character too, where he's up to something. You don't know what it is. It's not just some ha 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 ha, I'm going to take over Asgard and the Earth, you know, villain that he had been for years in the Thor comics. So anyway, I think that's all that's right in it too.
Yeah, and I one thing I was thinking about, and I want to give full shout out to my boy Daniel Palmer, who at some point I'm going to do a comic corner, or my version of a comic corner that he does on the MTR network, which I'll put in the notes for this article for people listening. I would strongly recommend listening to him and Chris cover the Infinity War, Infinity Gauntlet, Thanos Imperative, Thanos Quest, because he does a masterful job. One of the things he mentioned that made me think about the idea of family and how things change when it goes to Loki is the idea of, like what you mentioned a few minutes ago, Bruce, there always has to be a god in the pantheon. So there might be a situation where, and we've seen this in comics, if Loki is around, maybe he gets reincarnated as a woman.
Oh, definitely. And you know, I thought it was really interesting that the movie preceding this was Thor Ragnarok, because in the mythology, in Norse mythology, it's always headed toward Ragnarok. the destruction of the gods, and then there's a rebirth period, and Jack Kirby, who was the main, there's Stan Lee, but Jack Kirby was the main creative force behind behind Thor in the comics, wanted to have Ragnarok and wanted to destroy Asgard and come back with new gods, and he was having problems with Marvel, and he ended up jumping to DC and starting his own mythology called the New Gods, and with Darkseid, who's who's an inspiration and analog to Thanos. And when he did that, if you look at the comics of Thor, and then go over to DC for those crazy ass Jack Kirby comics, New Gods, there's a clear bridge. There it is. There's this new thing, but there's a time of destruction, and then it cycles back to Asgard being rebuilt. And yeah, there's always got to be a Loki. There's always got to be a Thor. There's always got to be an Odin. But they come back in different ways. Odin's dead, and but there's still something kind of going on. Then you throw in Thanos and all this destruction here. It really resonates. It calls back to stories from thousands of years ago, much less comic books from 50 and 40 and 30 years ago.
And that's a good segue to this I wanted to bring up for both of you guys. I look at a lot of the issues. One of the issues I take with a lot of film critics is, much like with pro wrestling, if you don't like what you're watching, don't watch it. And a lot of these critics, as a result, have created this subculture of the Marvel bubble is going to burst because they see comic book movies as this fad as opposed to an extension of literature, an extension of history, an extension of culture. And so when you take what you just said, Bruce, and you put it on the screen, you have 18 films and now a 19th film, and you present this in such an interconnected way, where do you see this going in the future phases? Do you see it as something where you have to have seen the previous 19 to continue going on? Can someone pick this up cold? Because I personally don't see it that way. I see it as something where if you've only seen the Thor movies and you watched this, you're fine. If you only saw Black Panther and watched this, you're fine. It's just like if you watch, how many movies do we have that are analogs of Romeo and Juliet? How many times have we seen the star-crossed lovers and no one ever says to you, they did this like 5 years ago and they're just trying to make a buck?
Well, I mean, you can take one of the characters. You can take Hulk. You can take all kinds of characters like this. It doesn't necessarily have to be from a comic book universe, but you can take Hulk. They did some crappy movies with the Hulk. And hopefully I don't hurt anybody's feelings or anything. And
Travis Bryant.
Yes, superhero movies that sucked. They sucked as movies. And to me, a Hulk movie should be that the Avengers Hulk got it right, which is for all the angst of David Bruce Banner, of all the navel gazing that goes on with him. If you're watching a movie and it's 2.5 hours and 2 hours of it is a Bruce Banner, they screwed up. It's the Hulk kicking ass. That's what the movie should be. That's what it should on a big scale. And you can explain why, and you don't have to insult anybody's intelligence. But what you should get down to is a lot of chaos and a lot of suspense. If you take this material, it's like any other material, and you take this material and you do a great job with it for the time that it's in, for the culture and the time and the place in society that it's in, and then you have some eternal standards going on, then it can last. And if you don't, it can fade away. And I look at the Godfather movies. The first two movies are two of the greatest movies ever. Third movie has some good things in it. It has a lot of crap in it. That's what can happen. I mean, it's how they execute. And I did think that Marvel was getting into some, getting into some problems with how the first Avengers movie was, and it was great the first time, but you had the 30-minute, the Avengers fight a million foes at once, and they come through, and it's on and on and on and on and on and on and on, and it kind of follows, and some of the movies kind of follow that formula. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to move away from it. And yeah, you've got to, and then also in the comics, there comes a time where there's all this continuity, everything connects, But if you do it for 30 years, it'll collapse in on itself. So I think that, and it looks to me like Marvel knows this, in that, you know, this will be the first phase once Thanos, the Thanos story, however it ends in the next movie, the movies will kind of recreate a little bit, that they'll, you know, there's got to be, you know, Robert Downey Jr. can't be playing Thor forever, you know, much longer. And then you can do, and I know that Captain America said that he's not, you know, he's not going to stay forever either. So then you can kind of start the franchise again and do a good job with it. Look what they've done with Spider-Man. I mean, Spider-Man, first movies were good. Emo Spider-Man, I about shot my whole family because my niece made us all watch it at the beach, and I hadn't seen it, and I was so mad, and I couldn't explain why I was so mad at that movie and that weenie. You know, they turned Peter Parker into a weenie, but I'm, you know, it's you can, you know, it's just do you do quality work or do you not do quality work?
And what about – speaking of Spider-Man, I really liked how each time you got to see a world being introduced into the larger world, they came in on their terms. So with Spider-Man, he comes in on the school bus, and we get to see the spider sense physically for the first time, which was
– That's a great point. I hadn't thought about that. That's a great point.
See him on the school bus. You saw basically a continuation of what ended Ragnarok with Thor and his party. You see the end – or the continuation of the end of what happened between Spider-Man Homecoming and Doctor Strange in New York City, and then the Guardians open with a ballad and just space, whereas everything else was defined, and you got a really good idea of where people were. The Guardians, it's like you're somewhere, and they're and just... Even, oh, go ahead, Cam.
Yeah, and even Captain America, he basically appears out of the shadows because he's like a shadow ops, you know, operative now. Like, it was, yeah, the way that everybody came around was great. And then you, of course, Black Panther ends on that note of, you know, success and prosperity and sharing with the world. And so when they're approached, it's this big grand, even though you only have 2.5 hours. And then Vision and Wanda, how they kind of have to meet because they're a part of, you know, warring parties, but they're also kind of off on their like romantic space. Like, it just, they found a way to pay respect to everybody who had gotten a lot of time and even had plausible reasons for why you don't have an Ant-Man and a Hawkeye. Like, it just, they just knew what they were doing. They just, they put everything on the board and made sure they treated it all with respect. Just really good.
And that made
You know, and all these stories were in a case – they're in various parts of crisis. And, you know, the trouble between Tony Stark and Captain America and that stuff, it was still there. But there was also this feeling of, in the end, you know, what heroes do. Heroes sacrifice to do the right thing, and they fight back. And we're in this time where – we have our own Thanos. He's not smart, but I mean, we have this whole, you know, our culture and our country's at stake. And so,
same scalp.
Same jawline. Yeah. So what do you, you know, what do you do? Do you bicker and get slaughtered, or do you, you know, or do you stand up and fight for what's right? You know, do you stand up and fight for what's right? And that's kind of, you know, that's a real basic story, but it's definitely, you know, it's definitely there. And I remember going to see, I haven't seen all the movies, but I remember going to see Winter Soldier kind of going, okay, this is going to be the second, you know, Captain America is better once they get him out of World War II. And so this ought to be fun. And then going, holy crap, this is an Avengers movie that's moving everything forward very quickly that you can't miss. But I thought the balance of all these characters and keeping them, giving them enough airtime and keeping them important and having them doing important things, boy, you could have lost track of that really easily. And they did a great job in that, you know, in the length of that movie, it didn't feel like it was as long as it was. And they gave everybody their moments, and they gave everybody their, you know, their chicken shit side too.
And it was fun to me because I always look at the idea with wrestling. We talk about the people complain, you know, if you listen to fans long enough, you'll be in the stands with them. When you look at Kevin Feige, who runs Marvel, in the film division. He is a super fan that has a vision, and it was clear. And little things made big things. Kind of like a J. Michael Straczynski with his writing, where you might read something in page one, panel one, and then at the end of the series, you're like, holy crap, that's what that meant. And you really get an appreciation for paying attention. You get rewarded for it. So when you see Rocket messing around with people's body parts over the course of the Guardians movies, and then you see a preview with Thor with two eyes, and you just presume, oh, they were doing that because they didn't want to tell us he lost his eye in Ragnarok. No, he got an eye. Rocket gave it to him. And how much detail, like that little note, that could have been something that could have been on the cutting room floor three movies ago, and then you just yada yada it and give him an eye. But they took that care and showed that Rocket's personality, even to the point where he sees the Winter Soldier and he's like, how much for the gun? How much for the arm? I'm going to get that arm.
Yeah, I love the type of entertainment, you know, these long-form drama shows that are so popular and so well done now, you know, where you binge and watch, where there's a thread. And there's this thread that you pick up and you go along, and it disappears for a while and it comes back, and it pays off in a way where you go, damn, I knew that was something. You know, I knew something was going on with that, and that kind of storytelling. And this is instead of people, there were so many of these movies and so many of these television shows where you could tell the people that were creating it going, comic books are for idiots. You know, and that was the reputation that they had in the 70s, and no one was looking in the 60s. You know, some were looking, but it was like, you know, it was Dean Martin, who never read a book, reading comic books, like, ha, ha, ha. You know, the soldiers would read them. It was literature for people who couldn't read. And, you know, and I took some crap for that, like you take crap for being a wrestling fan. And you're going, no, there's some intelligent things going on here. And this is where – and there was a lot of crap too, but I mean, this is where these people who grown up with it and really loved it, and then saw what could be done. You know, starting with Star Wars, but saw what could be done with the source material. You know, did the intelligent thing. It doesn't. You don't have to hate what you're doing. You don't have to apologize for it. If people don't get it, that's fine. You know, just do your thing and do a good job with it. And this is what you can end up with, instead of a lot of what we see a lot of times in wrestling, where it's, you know, you get that, and they're not making the excuse, so it's just comic books, it's just superhero movies. Who cares what happened with that? No, you take your time and your care, and you pay attention to detail. And you, but it's still, you're telling a good guy versus bad guy story. At the end of the day, I think Black Panther's a better movie because it has that overarching political theme to it that great movies have. But this at the end of the day is a great popcorn movie, potboiler, all of that. And that's what you can make those kind of movies mean something. Or you can sit there and go, it's a bunch of crap, and you know, our audience are idiots, and I'd rather be writing sitcoms or Saturday Night Live skits, and that's and then you get crap, then you get a crap product.
We see you, Justice League. We see you.
Oh God, I'm like, I haven't seen Justice League. It's like,
don't do it, Bruce.
As I heard, oh, yeah, I know, and I was like, and I know, like, if Superman, I go off on a nice like 2-hour tirade about this, but if Superman is defending against some villain in Metropolis and 100,000 people die during the fight, he ain't Superman. The point of Superman is he finds a way. If he doesn't find a way and all these people die, then he's not Superman. And there was one of the Batman movies I thought was really good until – I mean, it was the Heath Ledger Joker movie, and Heath Ledger was a great Joker, and – that movie was really well acted, but then Joker presents Batman with the choice of characters you can't, you shouldn't. And so this is, you know, in the Avengers, you know, in the Marvel Universe, you know, a lot of people are getting killed, you know, during the battles, and they don't shy away from it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like, you know, and Superman killing somebody, it's like, no, Spider-Man is not killing anybody, and Superman is not killing anybody. It's like that's part of it. And Batman is not killing anybody. So Superman snapping somebody's neck from Krypton is like, well, you just went against the elemental part of the character. And that's what, you know, and then you can't tell the same type of story anymore because it's the you know, he's the big blue scout. I mean, that's, you know, he's the guy that he's the alien who got raised in Kansas with small town values. He tries to be a good person because he thinks there's good in everybody on Earth. He's not, well, I'll kill him because, you know, without a trial, because hell, it's real politic. It's like, no. So anyway. All right.
I think that when Marvel put out the Ultimate imprint, even though there were a bunch of mistakes and so many dumb things happened, one of the good things that they did when they brought in the Hulk, they had him fight somebody in a city, and they were fighting up the side of a building. There's all this destruction, and they came out and said afterward how many people died, like, in the city because of that fight. Wow. And then you you take that to Captain America Winter Soldier when they're fighting, and then Wanda shoots the bomb up the side of the building, and then a bunch of students die. That leads to, you know, what we see in Civil War. Like, again, they do such a great job of there being actual stakes, like, to all this happening. And so if you've been paying attention, like, you can't leave the movie by saying, okay, I know X, Y, and Z happened, but everybody's going to come back and it's going to be perfect. And Rich, just like you were saying, like, where do you go from here? I think that when you bring in a world killer like Thanos, it's not just what you see on screen. It's that he makes his motivations clear. And so he doesn't have to be around forever, but people have already accepted he's going to have some type of lasting impact. So there are
I'm going to interrupt. I'm sorry, but there, like, the second movie is going to be, what's the real cost here? And then the scene with Nick Fury, after the credits, you saw the cost of what this maniac, this genocidal maniac, when you're sitting there thinking, well, it makes sense. You know, if we really did get rid of half the population, then, you know, there'd be an adjustment. We'd miss these people who disappeared, but then everything would be okay. No, it'd be complete chaos and grief stricken. And, you know, just this, the world would be horrible after that. And, you know, planes be crashing into each other. And so you got the villain who you understand his motivations, and he thinks he's the hero. And no, he's a psychopath, and that's but there's not going to be, they're going to put back the Marvel Universe at some point, but there's going to be a cost to all these characters, and, you know, I'm sure some of them won't make it, and which ones that's going to be, that's part of this too, but they won't betray their own, you know, Captain America's not going to betray the Captain America character.
Yeah.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
And it's funny you mentioned that. You think about Captain America, and we were introduced to him in basic training throwing himself onto a grenade to prove that he – not even to prove – that was him. One life was worth more than everyone else. Mm-hmm. And now by the time we get to the 19th movie, he's finally agreed with everyone else, we do not trade lives for lives. We save everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. In the comics, it was interesting because that was before, I want to say it was the Amazing Spider-Man 600, when Peter went crazy because he had lost Silver Sable and decided that no one dies. And that was his mantra. And everyone kept dying every single time he tried to help someone. It was Rhino's wife. It was Sandman's daughter. You know, you name the person he tried to help. And ultimately, that culminated in him being so broken that he died. And Dr. Octopus became the superior Spider-Man. And so with Marvel, I'm looking for this next Avengers movie and this next iteration to be death and rebirth. And I think we kind of saw the end when Thor used Stormbreaker on Thanos and he said, you should have went for the head. The gauntlet was in many ways not necessarily shattered but broken. And being a big fan, and I know our partner in crime, Travis Bryan, even though he's a punk and he's not here right now, is a big fan of the cosmic stuff and the Ultimates, the idea of the multiverse And I think that brings in a lot of things. Like, you know, we know for a fact that the gentleman who was hired to play Quicksilver signed up for 5 movies. We know that all these other people are in the periphery and can become to the fore now as main heroes. We have the Wasp. We have Shuri. So maybe we have an opportunity to expand with her as the Black Panther for a while. There's so many things you can do and reintroduce new characters with twists. I mean, the idea of the Winter Soldier becoming Captain America for a time. Dare I say, the idea of, even though he's problematic in real life, Falcon becoming Captain America and raising that shield. And when you mentioned Bruce, the idea of Heath Ledger's Joker, I kept thinking, no matter what, the Russo brothers, they talked in interviews about the idea of Thanos seeing himself as the protagonist. He sacrificed, just like we talked about throughout this, the idea of family. He gave up his daughter. He gave up his best friends, and he gave up his life, really, to accomplish this mission and to sit peacefully at the beach as the world burns, the universe burns. The you thought moment with Gamora, and, you know, we'll jump into some final thoughts in a little bit, but I want to get your thoughts on that. Like, the moment where you see Red Skull, not played by Hugo Weaving, unfortunately, but I get it. You don't want to be in the makeup for 8 hours. Hugo, suck it up. I love you. Suck it up.
Like, imagine Hugo Weaving saying, like, he has better things to do. Yeah. Like, was there a Matrix prequel coming out? Like you were just – anyway. the one moment that I had, like, an audible visual reaction was when Red Skull appeared. Like, that – it just – it's that thing that justified all the time to me. It was already justified, but just like, wow, this is what ended up happening to Red Skull after all this time. Like, it was great. I loved it so much. You know, for Zoe Saldana as an actress has done some cool stuff, is deeply entrenched in this, like, science fiction world now. And for us to see something coming that she didn't see, and the way she played it was so fun in the theater. And
it was, again, like the festival of friendship.
Yeah. Bruce, have you seen – and Rich, I know you've seen it because you watch everything. Did you see the Jonah Hex movie, Bruce, with Josh Brolin?
Oh, hell no. No. Okay. No, okay. And like that book – I love that book. I mean,
great.
Yeah. The last iteration of it was just tremendous. I love that character. And as soon as I heard they hadn't done such a great job with it, I'm not sitting through that. No, yeah. No. It's just like,
no, so my entire, like, my comic book fandom and my Western fandom are both tied to my stepfather. So Jonah Hex was something as a kid, like, I was already into. But I say that to say, like, Josh Brolin does Jonah Hex, and now we might have to talk about Josh Brolin, depending on how well Deadpool 2 does, as, like, one of the greatest characters ever in comic movies, because, like, he smashes this. Mm-hmm. And even if you take out everything else that happened before and everything after, like, him playing that journey from, like, being on that planet, watching his facial reactions, and really, they even borrowed from the Planet Hulk animated movie. They had him play a different character than the guy who was the king there, that basically took in Hulk's wife Hulk's eventual wife as a kid. Mm-hmm. But it's still that thing where I see something different in you. I'm still going to do bad things to your planet, but you're special to me at this point. Like, they had that relationship, and then just seeing her visual reaction to what he's planning on doing after Red Skull says he's not crying for himself, just amazing. It's just all great. And my favorite part of the movie from start to finish was that. And just, yeah, just his dedication to his mission, his willingness to sacrifice to complete his mission. It doesn't get much better as, and again, people like D-Palm, who I love dearly and say bad things about all day, and as smart as he is, like, you can't tell me somebody who wipes out half the universe is your protagonist. I don't care how much of a focus there is on him, like taking that many lives with the snap of your finger, that your conviction doesn't equal your goodness or even, like, the validity of your point. So yeah, but he was just fantastic, and they couldn't have picked a better villain. And again, once they get him out the paint, it's rebuilding. And I just think that you have so much on the table, like all these secondary characters that we're not talking about. You still have, you know, your Ant-Man going strong. Somehow they made a great movie out of that, and they're probably going to do that again. Captain Marvel, so now you have Cosmic, and you have all these characters probably sitting on the bench with genetic mutations. And I'm going to say that really cryptically because now I have to go, guys. But thank you for having me on.
All right, Cameron. Always a pleasure, my man.
Wait a minute. You've got to go so I can't – we got something we got to take care of real quickly then.
It's funny. The signal going bad now. Can't hear. Bye, guys.
Ah, liar.
See.
Okay. Now I understand.
See, he's smooth. He's really smooth. And so if you want to follow Cam, it's at CEE Hawk, all one word. Bruce and I are going to finish up here. But, Bruce, I want to get your thoughts on that. What did you think of Thanos as they tried to project him? The Russo brothers did a really good job trying to make him seem like he's the protagonist and showing how much pain he was in. While also saying, by the way, I had this other stepdaughter that I treated like crap. I intentionally knew she was going to lose every fight and just kept tearing her apart physically and mentally because it was a thing to do.
He's a psychopath who thinks who has these selfish impulses that he thinks are good for everybody. And the big change in the Thanos character over Jim Starlin's original Thanos character and how – and I always thought Starlin had – it's his own character. You know, that was his baby. And when he would come back over the years, I always thought he did his best work there. And the whole thing with Thanos was that Thanos was in love with death and that there was – and that there was a character – who was death in a robe of either a beautiful face or a skull face, who never said anything, who he always played to and tried to win over by killing as many people across the universe as he could. And in the original Infinity Gauntlet, that's why he killed half the universe, was as a token of love to death. And one of the things I thought was really cool about what Starlin did was – and in the 70s, he was left alone with these characters, even Avengers. I mean, he was left alone to use the Captain Marvel that came before Carol Danvers. And also, his father died of cancer, so he wrote one of the first graphic novels, the first superhero big-time graphic novel, The Death of Captain Marvel. He just took his hero and had him get cancer. And he didn't die in a battle. He died like people do who have cancer. You know, he's wasted away, and everybody came to see him. And the last scene was Thanos coming to see him and bringing death. But the whole thing was death in Thanos's mind, or was this the personification of death? And then I also thought, like Neil Gaiman wrote a death character in his Sandman books that became really popular, the idea of you have one life, you know, if a baby dies, in the first week of life, that baby still had a life. If someone lives to 110, that's their life too, but you have a life and it has a beginning and an end. The death character, I was always like, you know, like, why the hell does death need Thanos? It's, you know, everybody's going to die sooner or later. She's not going anywhere. So he's not giving her anything that she doesn't already have. So they kind of took that away and did he's the eco-terrorist. He's the one that looks and sees, you know, where the suffering really is coming from out of control growth and population growth and just all the petty and huge crimes against the earth that are made, or against the planet that are made, and goes, if you get rid of the people, you know, if you get rid of half the people, then the other half will live well. And that's right, but it's insane. And so I think the movie is about Thanos, but that doesn't make him the protagonist. That just makes him a major part, you know, the major character in the movie. Everything revolves around him, but he's the antagonist. You know, this movie is about an antagonist, and the protagonists are coming, you know, are dealing with him and getting dealt with by him. It doesn't, to me, if you watch that movie and went, yeah, Thanos is right. Like, I'm on the side of Thanos. It's, you know, I love what Callahan did. I mean, that was funny. Like, you know, he was the villain who sees all the horrible things that he does as, you know, the right thing to do, because he's that, because that's the best kind of villain. Dr. Doom is the best kind of villain. Darth Vader is the best kind of villain, where they think that they're doing the right thing and they can make a really good case, but, you know, obviously they're not, you know, obviously there's something really twisted and wrong with what they're doing. And so, yeah, that's and it's also it's not just what you do, it's how you do it. And I thought this movie, with what you were talking about, with, you know, we don't trade lives, it's how you do things. You know, it's not keep America safe but give up all your rights and torture people and give up all the basic values, but you're safe. Well, that's, you know, that's been done in human history before too, and that's and it can have terrible consequences. So it's what do you, you know, it's do you under the worst type of pressure, do you keep your ethical base? And the heroes do in this movie. There's nobody as different and as flawed as they all are, who isn't sacrificing everything he can to stop this guy. And then there's Thanos, who, by any means necessary, to the point of, you know, genocide, to the point of nihilism. And those are interesting themes to play with.
And I do want to talk about, like, the end game here, because we talked about most of the beginning, a good bit of the middle, but in the end game, you know, you had Doctor Strange talking about he saw 14,605 or something like that scenarios in which they fight Thanos, and only one in which they win. And obviously we're presuming, or I would hope anyone listening to this presumes this is the one in which they win. The side effect of that is we had that spot. Like, if this was wrestling, it was the tag spot or the visual pin when the ref's down, where you had the camera angle, especially because all of it was 3D and not 3D, I'm sorry, computer generated. It was amazing to me where they had the fingertips of the gauntlet off of him as five superpowered heroes are fighting him like a dad with the kids, like assaulting him when he gets in the door. And Peter Quill is in the role that we've seen time and time again in the last 18 movies Tony Stark's been in, of the impetuous person who put his feelings ahead of whatever the plan was. From the very second we saw him in The Avengers, I have a plan, attack. To now, yeah. 18 yeah. movies later, he's telling Quill, calm down, we almost have this, we almost got it, don't let him win. And he's now the voice of reason. And so what did you think about that endgame as far as like how the roles were reversed, and then he pays for his impetuousness by watching Peter Parker die, a thing he didn't think he would want to see given the whole theme of family throughout, where he swore that Pepper Potts was pregnant. And that alludes to, if you read the comics, he has a son in the future that's like this super futurist. And if you've been reading any Riri Williams, you go into that too. So what do you think about that part, Bruce?
I think one of the things in these movies and in the comics too is the arc of these characters and how they morph and change with the times, and then they have to kind of recreate them in continuity, because, you know, Peter Parker can't be a 70-year-old man or 50-year-old man, and you don't want a high school, and also fans get tired of reading about a high school kid. So what do? You bring him back, you know, you make him a young adult for many, many years, you marry him off, and then you change it back and bring him back to what they're doing in the movies, was just a really appealing teenage kid that harkens back to the origins of this thing. I say that because I thought that some of this is the irresponsibility of Tony Stark, who's this hedonist who can, you know, who can create wealth and lose it and create it back again, and knows he can screw all these women, can have this great life, but he's trying to do the right thing, and it's in his head as a futurist that if he doesn't prepare for the future, because he can prepare for the future in a way that no one else can, then the future is going to crush everybody. And that, you know, and, you know, I thought like they did a little bit in Winter Soldier of, was he drinking again? And they didn't answer the question, because he's an alcoholic too. So it's, you know, all the pressures and all that, that was part of it. And then to see the impetuousness of Star-Lord and Peter Quinn doing what what he did and then screwing up, I thought it was really interesting that Peter Quinn died. Mm-hmm. You know, that Peter Quinn got erased, because I really did figure, you know, I'm watching Travis on I haven't talked to him about it, but I'm watching Travis on social media going, you know, and all the platforms that he's on going, isn't this Peter Quinn's fault? God damn it. And I'm like, you know, I'm like, clearly he screwed up and clearly that means something for later on. Right. And, you know, that I mean, that means something major. And he's this, and his story is a guy trying to find a family, you know, that like lost his mother and listens to that, by the way, just to talk about white man's music, listen to that great Guardians of the Galaxy movie, that music soundtrack that his mom gave him, that's all he has left of his family. And he lets down this family because he's, you know, he's dysfunctional and they're all dysfunctional. And so I thought that was really interesting, but I also thought, you don't lay it on him. And then the part about the one thing, you know, the one and whatever, all those eventualities. And one of my teacher friends who is not a comic fan just went, oh, yeah, well, so if you look at that, you go, yeah, they're playing out that eventuality. And I thought, yeah, there's this game. There's this plan that Strange and maybe Loki, but Stark for sure, all are playing out. And is all of this part of the one chance that they have to set things right and to beat him? And is the game still afoot even in the end game? So yeah, that's it's how all that's going to play out in the next movie, but it is going to play out in the next movie.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Yeah, and I would be remiss, word to my guy, if I didn't mention the hilarity to me as a film fan outside of the comic movies that both Sherlock Holmes were arguing with each other for the better part of like an hour in my modern era.
That was fun. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
And they're both arrogant. It's amazing to me that they're both arrogant in so many different ways. Like you have Robert Downey Jr., you mentioned this at the very beginning when Cam was on. Robert Downey Jr. was born to play Tony Stark because he is Tony Stark. You look at his entire life from Ally. This is a man who was doing the Ally McBeal Emmy-nominated comeback and was doing so from prison as a work release program.
Right. Yeah, and he's completely talented and completely screwed up and, you know, can end up passed out in some stranger's house, you know, because he's so effed up. He wanders in somebody's house, has plenty of money, lays down, and they arrest him. So it's like, you know, can he keep that? Can he keep his addictions at bay and do the work that he's capable of? And, you know, I remember those years. It was like another, you know, another spoiled, screwed up movie star.
Yep. He was the Brat Pack. He was in that whole Brat Pack.
Yeah, it's like another one of these guys. And you're not going to see anything much from him. And then somehow you saw a hell of a lot from him. And just mining what's in the Tony Stark character, because you're scared for him in this movie, and he's really emotionally – God knows he should be too. I'd hate to live in that Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'd be like really pissed off. I think I'd hate to live in the DC Comic Universe or the Marvel Universe too, because it's just one crisis after another, and you're lucky if you live through any of it. But, I think that that's – I think that all that's a big – you know, a big part of – what's here in the callbacks. Oh, and the Doctor Strange Stark thing. I don't read all the postscript stuff. I mean, I try religiously to stay away from the trailers and the spoilers and all that beforehand, all the speculation. I really do. And so I can just kind of take it as hopefully take it as I can when I go in the movie. But I did read that, and I love this too, that Doctor Strange and Iron Man, that bickering back and forth was a callback to Niles and Fraser Crane from Fraser. Like the producers, the Russo brothers said they were looking for that kind of snarkiness between two people that had so much in common, and they wanted Iron Man to see, so this is what arrogant jerks are like. This is what people say I'm like. Oh, I can sort of understand it because they're both so self-absorbed that they they wouldn't see. But when they run up against each other, the genius arrogant jerk, it both attracts them and repels them.
Yeah, and if you think about the arcs both characters have been on, I love the fact that they got to interact because of the fact when you go back to the Doctor Strange, before his car accident that ruined his hands, he was turning down the opportunity to save Rhodes' spine after the Civil War battle. Because they were giving him like all the options of the different spinal cases, and they're like, yeah, there's this guy who was just in a body armor, and he's like, too easy for me. And then you flip it to Tony, and Tony had years upon years of Stark weapons to the point where you have Wanda Maximoff. You know, many people, I talked to a few friends who aren't comic fans, and they didn't like Age of Ultron because they thought it was boring and slow, and they didn't like James Spader. And that's one of my favorite movies because of the fact that you see all of Tony's demons coming back to haunt him in one movie. You have Ultron, his prodigal son, who he creates through violence and fear and the futurism and everything you mentioned a second ago. You have Wanda and Pietro, who now are created into this world of war, where they sat staring at a bomb that said Stark Industries and wondering if it was going to go off as people tore through the rubble to get to them. And the hatred they had for him, and now they look at him and can trust him. Or, you know, Wanda can trust him because Pietro's dead. That weighs on you. And so to still be that arrogant in spite of the failures you had is a special level of, you know, not necessarily jerk.
But also knowing that you've got to see it. You're so arrogant, but you are that chance. You're the only chance. And if you screw up, Ultron gets created. And if you screw up, you know, and so you've got to see it through, because if you lose your arrogance and your confidence, the future will crush everybody. So that's, you know, that's really – I do want to say too, as an old-time Marvel Comics fan, in the 70s, the most important Avengers characters were the Vision and the Scarlet Witch. And there was just this amazing job done by Roy Thomas and particularly Steve Englehart, the writers, during that 10-year span of building this kind of Mr. Spock ripoff from Star Trek, the android with no emotions, into a three-dimensional character, having him fall in love with the mutant Scarlet Witch and then being a couple in a real way. And then John Byrne, famous of the Avengers and Fantastic Four and Man of Steel, Superman, comes along and goes, comes along in the 80s and goes, the Vision is like a toaster. In the end, he's a toaster oven. He's a calculator, and just tears it all apart. And you know, makes the point that it's a machine. You know, it couldn't possibly have a soul. It couldn't possibly have. And you're just like, ugh. So to see the soulful Vision in this movie, with the Scarlet Witch, was a throwback to that era of my reading, and I was just like, damn, this is so cool, in a way that I bet I'm the only person in the movie theater thinking this, or there's probably some old guys, you know, my age thinking it, old nerds thinking it, but I really thought that was well done. And the three deaths that got you the most, Spider-Man just like, oh God, you know.
Yeah.
And particularly having him, I don't feel well. So it's not like they're being transported to another dimension. It's like they're dying, you know, and he dies. And you're like, oh God. And then Vision gets Thanos just fucks him up and takes the soul gem. And he's clearly just this plastic husk after that. And with no soul, no nothing, he's dead as a doornail. And you're like, oh boy. And then, of course, the one in the theater that got everybody. That I did love the idea of you hit a home run with a franchise character that is going to change our culture. It's going to change our pop culture and our own mythologies forever. And that's Black Panther. And then people thought they killed him. Like,
yeah.
They're not, it's like you don't do that great a job and then just, oh, you know, and feature him so well in the movie that Wakanda is so – there's such a high quality there, and then – erase him and have people go, oh, you know, that I just thought that was really good. Although I was just like, please don't kill bald-headed girl. I want to marry bald-headed girl. And so I was like, I reluctantly trade Black Panther for her. But still, I mean, it was just, wow. Anyway, that's
and think about it. From the movie, she's now seen in a calendar year. She thinks she's seen her king die twice with her being able to do nothing.
Yeah. And there's a movie in those women, and I think we're going to see it. You know, yeah. There's a movie in the female Black Panther, definitely, and there's a movie in those women. And then talking about Jim Starlin and reading the Captain Marvels in the 70s that had the original story with Thanos and the Tesseract. They talked, you know, the Tesseract is in the – which is the cosmic cube, mm-hmm. which is just this, you know, clear, transparent cube that you can hold and any wish you have across the universe will come true. And they had this great – he told this great story, and then he told it again on a different level with the Infinity Gauntlet with George Perez and Ron Lim. And that was great and to see that. But and there's some scenes in the Infinity Gauntlet where – Thanos is on the moon with the gauntlet, and the only one left to face him is Captain America, and he's just so outpowered. There's just no chance. But because he's Cap, he does, you know, he's like, he faces off against Thanos with just that shield, and he does better than you think, but Thanos kills him anyway. And for the movie to call back that scene, but make it natural and not just – it didn't recreate it, but it definitely – had that, you know, of you've got – here's this guy that has really no chance, less of a chance than anybody else, and he's out there taking it to, you know, Thanos with the gauntlet because that's what you do, and that's what he did. I thought that was really cool. But I go back to the Black Panther, and that movie, Killmonger, created by this little white guy from Rhode Island, who got handed Black Panther. He was the lowest guy on the totem pole in Marvel Comics, and he went to another guy and said, well, I want to make this all about Wakanda. I want to make the whole book African characters, and he created this really cool, really well-written book, if not overwritten a little bit, that nobody bought except for me, and there's some other people that bought it. It was like known to be like this classic thing, but it wasn't very popular. And to see the scene where and Billy Graham, not superstar Billy Graham, not the preacher, but Billy Graham, who was one of the first mainstream African-American comic book artists who got to do Marvel. He did Luke Cage, and he did as Luke Cage was being created, and he did Black Panther real early on and did this really amazing art. And to see that scene of Killmonger picking up Black Panther and throwing him over, you know, over the falls. And I put that on my Instagram. I was so happy to see Travis go, what the hell is this? I've never seen this before. What, this is great. What the hell? Where'd you find this? And I'm like, kid, you know, I had it in my, you know, my beat up comic, you know, for all those years. And when it came back around, I was like, damn, that was really cool. But there was the idea of some well-meaning liberal white guys going, let's do characters like this. And some of them were, Black Lightning and in the 70s in DC, Black Lightning and Panther and, you know, and Jack Kirby going, well, damn, you know, there's a lot of black people read comics. Let's market to that, and then getting with some authentic voices and moving even further. I just think it was really cool. I really, you know, I really like that.
No, yeah, I really appreciate the care with which a lot of these writers took the characters. I mean, I think back to the X-Men and how, for me growing up, it was a polemic for growing up as a person of color and dealing with issues of race and identity and who are you in this world. And then now in this generation, for me in my day job, seeing people in the LGBTQIA community identifying with the X-Men for the same reason. And I know a less cultured, a less mature me would have said, oh, I can't see that. What do you mean? But now I see it. I've seen the world. And at 37, I can see the corollaries. And I can and comics do that for us. And it's really cool that people can take that step out on the limb and make these characters. I think about in the movie, the idea of Steve Rogers. I hated Captain America when I was a kid. I just saw him as a boring white guy like Superman. It never really spoke to me until I read The Death of Captain America. And then I see these movies, and I see him say, I can do this all day. And he's repeated it over and over in these movies where there's no chance. Or when the little cute moment in Age of Ultron, when they were drunk and they wanted to see who was worthy of Mjolnir, and he shook the hammer. And Thor was a little shook because the hammer moved. And then you mentioned a few minutes ago that to complete the circle, he goes one-on-one with Thanos with the Infinity Gauntlet, and Thanos thinks he's just going to crush him like a bug, and he moves him. And
yeah.
That was all I needed to see. Like, you just need – I thought about the chills I got when I first saw him in the I think it was Scotland they were in, the Scotland rail station, when Corvus Glaive and Proxima Midnight were trying to wreck Wanda and the Vision, and you just see it, and you hear his like music, and you see the toll he's paid. He's the American flag is gone from his visage. He has the shadow of the star. And to your point, that was a really good political statement about what's going on now. Like, what is America? Who are Americans? How much of us are going to be left when this is over? And what are you willing to trade for it? And it was just mind blowing.
And, you know, the Nomad callback and what you're talking about, I've waited 40 years to tell this story. Comic book kid, 14 years old, buying Captain America, my favorite writer, and still to this day of comic books. So there's a lot of great writers in comic books, and there are lots of them now. There's a lot of crappy ones, too, but, I mean, that's how art is. But was this guy Steve Englehart, and he takes over Captain America. And it's 1974. Y'all can laugh, screw you. It's 1974, 1972, 73, 74. And Richard Nixon has been reelected to office, but he sent some of his stooges over to burglarize the Democratic National Headquarters. And won the election, even though he didn't need to. He crushed he crushed George McGovern, and had a strong base of a silent majority that didn't like the changes in the culture, that didn't like what was going on, and a lot of things that he made even though Nixon expanded the welfare system more than anybody else, he also was part of the Southern strategy that we see now has what it's done, but of, you know, I'll do those dog whistles, I'll do those dog whistle signals to the part of the population that the biggest, and they'll vote for me, and then I'll get done. And between this correlation, just combination of voters, I'll get to be the president and do what I want to do for the good of the world. So anyway, I'm this kid, but I'm interested in politics, and I'm watching Watergate, and there's these hearings, and I'm also reading this comic book, and all of a sudden there are these characters in this comic book while the president's in this scandal that clearly are inspired by Haldeman and Ehrlichman, who were his two top aides, who ended up in prison, who are in the papers all the time. And here's Captain America getting framed by an advertising agency that he wasn't Captain America. And there's this secret empire behind it. And yes, that book recently was inspired by this series. But I remember sitting and getting the last issue of the secret empire thing that brought back the X-Men, who were dead as a doornail as a comic book, brought them back into it because – Englehart wanted to have it. And so Captain America chases the hooded number one, not Paul Jones number one, but number one of the Secret Empire. And he chases him down the street in Washington, D.C. And the guy goes into the White House. And then in the last page, he's running, and Cap gets in, and the guy unmasks, but they won't show you who it is. And he unmasks, and Cap goes, "Not you," and puts his hand up, and then they show a gun go off, and number one commits suicide. And then Captain America walks out grief-stricken out of the White House. Well, Richard Nixon was in office. It wasn't like they knew, you know, it wasn't like Marvel knew that Englehart knew that he was going to resign, or Marvel knew that it was going to end up the way it ended up. It was just they didn't have any edit, you know, like they didn't have a creative team. They didn't have the WWE creative looking over their shoulders. It was just like, if you write this book and you make it sell, then you get to keep writing the book. And if it doesn't sell, we'll get somebody else. But they didn't micromanage them much at all. They were barely able to get the books out as it was, Marvel at that point. But they did this, like, and I remember going, holy crap. I was 14 years old going, that took a lot of balls. Oh, my God. Can you imagine the real president of the United States is the villain in this story? And he's a villain in, you know, in a lot of my eyes, but in a lot of people's eyes even then. And people get fired. People back then would get fired off of stuff like that. It wasn't done very often. It, you know, it was the first time I ever saw. So for this book to have Nomad and this book to you know, the death of Captain America echoed that. That was the original Captain America quits because he loses faith with the country because he feels like the country's betrayed him, because a lot of people felt like the country had betrayed them when with what Nixon had done. And then the path back to being Captain America. And they told that story too. And so that was and there was a really cool callback in that Secret Empire by Nick Spencer to that storyline that that he just snuck in there. That I was just like, oh my God. Again, the teenage kid in me would have been thrilled. But yeah, all those little parts of Captain America is supposed to be the ideals of America, of the Constitution, of what America really does stand for, not some superhero, you know, wearing a American flag and thumping the Bible. This is what you read in the Constitution. This is what you read. This is what the ideals are supposed to be. He's supposed to be the living embodiment of them. And, you know, the world changes around him, but he reacts to those changes. And now you've got Ta-Nehisi Coates, who brought Black Panther back in the comics for the movie, you know, the National Book Award winner, taking those themes and he's going to do that with a new Captain America book coming out this summer that was previewed Free Comic Book Day. And I'm like, yeah, I know this thing. This is going to be really interesting. So,
we know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and I want to see his vision for what Captain America is, because like I said, this is the Captain America First Avenger fundamentally changed how I looked at Captain America, the comic book character. And I'm putting in my show notes for this ways that people, because you mentioned while we're different in age, because of technology, like we talk about WWE Network and their content providers. One of the greatest things Marvel did was, I want to say 4 or 5 years ago, is when they made Marvel Unlimited. While I still go to my local comic shop, I pay $60 a year, and I can read almost everything they've ever published. So when you mention, you know, this key storyline, I can hop on my Marvel Unlimited and throw it on my tablet and read it. And so being able to dive into Infinity, which happened a couple of years ago, and know how awesome it was to see the Black Order the first time in the comics, and to see the scene where Corvus Glaive is talking to Black Bolt and telling him that we don't fear death because we are with Thanos, and all of his honor guards slit their throats just to show how far they're willing to go to do whatever Thanos wants them to do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. God. Yeah. That was really, and boy, he was the car is like, one of the things that made Thanos better, I think, in this movie was Thanos had the carnival barker in him. Mm-hmm. You know, that was really well done and cool. And I'll say this too, Dave Bautista as Drax the Destroyer, who is not the best character in the little Thanos universe that Jim Starlin created at all, like, you know, pretty dull, to be that great a comic relief character and for Bautista to play it instead of playing it like wrestlers play comedy, to play it so you know, so dry is beautiful. It's just like, wow, that was really I'm happy for that guy. I mean, that was really something.
Yeah, and I mentioned this a few weeks ago in the deep dive, but the fact that they could not find a place for that man at WrestleMania, with the biggest movie in film history coming out in terms of profitability, was criminal. I mean, I go back to when he was on Talk Is Jericho a couple of years ago, and he mentioned how Stephanie and Triple H laughed in his face when he did the first Guardians and said, how do you know that's even going to be good?
Oh, that was hilarious to me. When they brought him back for, you know, the skinny jeans comeback, but I was talking about it at the time. I'm like, what the hell's wrong with WWE? Why don't they just – this is a hit movie. It's going to be a hit movie. It's a hit movie. Why aren't they talking about it all the time? And they have the guy doing – you know, on their television, and they can't bring it up. And you're just like, petty. And, you know, it's – you know, why Dave Bautista and why not you know, and why not the son-in-law? You know, that's what that – you know, and that is part – that's definitely part of it. And, you know, if you succeed with them – they're happy for it. They like that. But if you succeed away from them, and you know, they were mad at Rock about that too. There was a jealousy component with Rock until Rock got to be so big that they couldn't help themselves, and then they start kissing his ass again. It was it's amazing. It's like, wouldn't the first call you make be to the movie star, Dave Bautista? Like, you want to come and work? Tell us who you want to work with. Tell us who you want to be. We'll put you on, and we'll put movie previews all over our television. Like, yeah. You would think that would be the obvious deal to make.
Especially when they make all these allusions to doing this for the kids and how much that's their demographic. Who else? Well, I mean, for this movie, you don't want the kids going to it. I mean, I didn't take my own son because it was just so dark. But they remarkably dropped the ball. And before we get out of here, Bruce, I do have one question in the email. I got it from Brian Austin, our 27-year senior PW Torch VIP subscriber.
Oh my God, we're back on Blog Talk Radio, aren't we? This is awesome.
Oh, okay. It's cool. And so Brian sent this in.
Brian, thank you. Brian was like, man, Brian saved my ass so many times when I could just go, there's Brian. It's like, I can count on him for good content and to get the caller start off right and all that. So, that's cool to have him. So,
yeah, he said, as soon as I put the tweet out, I like 10 minutes later, I got an email. So I had to make sure I got this out before we got out of here. So, hello friends. Even though I know everyone will get reincarnated, I'll admit I was a little sad when the superheroes turned to dust. My question, if you could switch one hero that lived with one hero who died, who would you choose? Example, Spider-Man lives, but Captain America dies. Thanks.
Spider-Man has to die. It was such a heart-wrenching thing. You have to do it. You know, he's a kid. He's this high school kid who's trying to do the right thing with these powers, and he just got them, and he's in way over his head. And then you've got this father figure in Tony Stark looking after him, and he dies in front of him in that heart-wrenching way. So, I saw this one, and I don't know what to tell you, except for, you know, what would have been heart wrenching. And I think it was, you know, I think it was, I always mispronounce this, 'cause I never hear anybody say it except for in the movie. The Major de Joe, maybe kill her and keep Black Panther. But the statement that they made by killing Black Panther, by killing T'Challa, was just so strong too. I don't know that I have one for that. I don't know that I have one for that. There wasn't anybody. I thought it was really gutsy to kill both heads of the Shield. Mm-hmm. at the end, and to make it like, okay, it isn't just you're choosing between these two. Like, it could be two together, and you just, you know, because you don't, you see her die, and you're like, well, that means that Samuel Jackson's okay, and then he's not. You know, it's like, so, so I don't have a good answer for that. I think that they picked, for the most part, the right ones, and at the very least, the one, as I said, the one that made that like was really interesting was I figured Peter Quill would live, because then he would be the one who was guilt ridden over screwing everything up, and he would have that chance for redemption at some point in the second movie. But, you know, and I think he still will in some way, but it was just like, wow, you know. And was it you that I saw? Boy, I sure did love the Spinners. That was great to see. Rubber Mad Man, that was a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, that was. Oh, I mean, for me, I'm torn because one, I am a big fan of not necessarily spoilers in the sense of, well, obviously we're doing a spoiler cast here, but I am a big fan of the behind the scenes stuff after the fact.
Yeah.
So when I found out that the actor who plays Spider-Man improv that scene, I was flabbergasted.
Oh wow! No, yeah. I didn't know that. Holy
yeah, the
crap.
Russo brothers just told him you're gonna die.
Go. Yeah.
And so him doing I don't feel so good, Mr. Stark, I don't feel so good, and then I don't want to go.
Yeah.
It was just that's heart wrenching, and that's and the show the
you
relationship
can't not have that.
Yeah.
That was where it was like, the stakes are the highest of them all. That was when you knew that, like, this wasn't like a – they weren't faking you out. This was – they were dying. And they are they did die. They are dead. So, yeah, that was – now, I will say, as far as spoilers go, it used to drive me crazy with Wade. Wade would go, I didn't see that. And I'm like, well, you know what? You know, you should have seen it by now. It's like I'm all for spoilers, but if you haven't seen this movie – with all the talk of it, and you wanted to see it, you've had 2 weeks to see it, you know. And if you listen to this, and we killed it all for you, it's like that's your fault.
Yeah. If anything, if you're listening to it at this point, just like I mentioned him, and I have him in my notes, my buddy Palm. When he goes into detail on things, it's not to ruin the movie; it's to give you a better experience, because not everyone has read the comics. Not everyone has.
Most people haven't, and most people aren't.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Like, I'm going to fly to see my folks on Saturday, so this is I'm really happy we got to do this. So when I'm in the airport, one, I'm going to have my tablet to make sure my son doesn't drive my wife crazy. But two, I'm going to have – I bought two during Free Comic Book Day. I bought the first two trade paperbacks of the Tom King run of Batman because I hadn't read it.
Good for you. Yeah. Oh, God. That's good for you. Yeah.
And I wanted to get the War of the Jokers, but I figured that, one, I didn't want to get in trouble for spending too much money in the month, and two, I wanted to just start. I got two, I can read one on the flight, one at a layover, I got a couple of comics from my pools I can read. Travis got me into Domino, I'm really enjoying that, especially with Gail Simone. If I see one more person on Twitter lose their mind because she says Scott's optic blasts are hot, and they could... they just fall for it every single time. They just fall right into that trap. But yeah, so I'll do that. And so when you watch this movie, if you haven't, if you're like Wade and you haven't seen it and you're gonna complain about spoilers, don't listen to this. At this point, you really it's too late for you anywhere. But definitely, I put in the notes how you can join Marvel Unlimited, or you know, just take your butt down to the local comic shop, talk to the comic provider, and say, hey, I want to read more about this stuff. What should I read? And a really good comic shop owner is going to work with you. Now, if you have a jerk, fine. Come back. Find me on Twitter at @Rich_fan. Find Bruce at @MitchellPWTorch.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah, clearly I never get to talk about this stuff. So when I do with John Hitchcock and the people around in that shop when I go shopping and don't say it, don't tell them I said this, but the Lord Retail over at Acme Comics, but yeah, I mean, it's like that. I got the chance to talk about some stuff today that I was really thrilled after all these years of holding in. So, yeah, that's – I can point you in the right direction. But I'm also like – with comic books, it's not like wrestling. Wrestling, I'm like I want to learn everything I can. And I do want to learn everything I can about comic books as far as the business behind the scenes and the history of it. But I also like – if I look at something and I go, this isn't for me, whether it's good or bad, I'll skip it. But I also know, but what you're talking about is good stuff. And I also know, we talked about this with wanting to strangle Travis, is that you can sit there. It's not the characters to follow. It's the characters to follow if they have the right creative team. If someone's really writing, and I'm a writer guy first and not an artist guy, even though that sounds, I'm the only one in the world, I think, sometimes. But like Tom King and then the artist that he has doing Batman with him, you did the right thing. Read the first one, read the second one, and then, you know, the budget ought to be back to where you can buy the third one and build up into what's going on, because it is so uniquely done and it's so well done. I mean, I'm just like, damn, this is, I've read all these Batmans, and I haven't read all the Batmans, but I've read all these Batmans in different ways that's been done, and this guy found a new way to do it that harkens back to everything. So and again, does what you're talking about, where you can just, all you need to know is who Batman is, and you'll be fine. You can follow it, but if you've been reading for a long time, at least the good runs, you're going, yeah, this is really cool. So, you'll do fine. Let it build up. Wait till you get to the war between the Joker and the Riddler, and then, holy crap, you know. So.
Excellent. Well, Bruce, thank you so much for your time. We got to do that. We'll probably try to do this again. God, what's up, Ant-Man? Maybe I'll see if we can bring D-Palm on, or maybe even Travis might grace us with his presence, unless he's going to have you go on the East Coast cast for 5 minutes after a commercial break for no more than, like, you know, 17 seconds or whatever crazy rules he's got.
And I do want to say, since I didn't get to say this on the air, I'm not finished with Cameron.
Okay.
I listened to the show about whatever the hell those poor young men were talking about white people's music. Y'all missed. I mean, now I'm just kind of realized everybody missed the good stuff and all that. But I'm just like, whatever that was about white people's music. But I have an answer, and the door was open for me, and I have an answer about one specific thing, and the coward took off. I expected out of Travis, but Cameron took, for all that big talk, Cameron took off before I could play this card. So I will find a way to join that show with my rejoinder to white people music very soon.
Well, I'm sure that's going to be fun. If anything, I would say avoid the voicemail, because you could always duck it. You're going to have to call in under the cone of silence, and then just...
No, I want to be a guest. I'm sorry. I want to be a guest.
Oh, you want to actually...
I want to be on the air when I say what I have to say. So, I don't think they'll see where the old man's coming from. So, I mean, like, they won't see me coming on this one. And in fact, after we get off the air, I'm gonna smarten you up as far as that goes.
Excellent. Well, with that cliffhanger, thank you guys for listening. It's been a pleasure, as always, dive into something new, challenge yourself, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members, and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the live cast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.